We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to a Wednesday afternoon edition of the RotoWire NBA podcast, presented as always by WinBet. Check out winbet.com for all of your sports wagering needs. Alex, you're joining me as usual on Wednesdays. I really, really hoped that I don't know if I would say make it through the entire season. That's probably unrealistic, but I really hope that we would at least make it 3 weeks without COVID making major headlines in the NBA. And boy, was I wrong about that. It hasn't gotten as bad as last year, and hopefully it never reaches that point because that was borderline disastrous. But Kevin Love, Lauri Markkanen, Tobias Harris, Jakob Poeltl, Chris Middleton, all in protocols. Did I miss anybody else of relevance? It feels like there's been one or two a day over these last few days.
Yeah, not off the top of my head, but you're right. It is turning bad very quickly. And as far as we know, I think a lot of these guys are vaccinated, if not all of them.
Right.
So that obviously complicates things, and I assume they tested positive, that the league is still pretty, there's not a lot of transparency when it comes to that, just kind of whether or not the individual player is okay with it being reported that he has tested positive. But yeah, I mean, we're going to have to keep watching out for this as, if these guys are on your roster, obviously.
Yeah. It's a pretty major hit for, you know, but the announcement, like Poeltl, for example, that was a few hours ago. You know, I mean, he's already logged one game this week. You know, he's out for this week. Obviously, you're losing three or four more games. Probably going to miss all of next week. Like, the most frustrating thing is, I think there's a delay in the expected timetable. And this was the case last year too, where a player would enter health and safety protocols, and then you're waiting to find out, well, is he a close contact? Is it a false positive? Did he actually test positive? And you know, it always seems like there's like 24 to 48 hours where you're hoping that he's only going to miss 2 or 3 days. And then more often than not, you find out it's going to be 7 to 10.
Right. And you mentioned it, like if this news comes on a Wednesday and you can't switch the guy out of your lineup, like you're basically, you take a zero that week.
Yep.
And then the next week you probably can't play the guy. So,
right. And at least in theory, you have the ability to replace them, but at least in most of the leagues we're playing in, like I have not been impressed by who's been available on the waiver wires. Like, I don't even know if I made a single claim in stake league this past week. Like, it was pretty barren already.
When I saw some like decent players on the waiver wire, I just grabbed them without thinking about it. I was like, McDermott's on the waiver wire, I'll take that. Joe Ingles, yeah, on the waiver wire, I'll take him. And I just was not worried about how much I had to pay to get him.
Yeah, there's a lot of like, do I bring in Justin Holiday? Like, Jeremy Lamb is still sitting out there. Like, I'll admit I put in a claim on Hassan Whiteside in one league where I was down bad and really needed some rebounds, really needed some blocks. Like, it hasn't been good. I did somehow get Miles Bridges off waivers in one league though, which has been the steal of the century. Not something I normally get.
Well, congrats on winning that league.
Yeah, thank you. we'll see. Jason Tatum so far is doing everything he can to sink my field goal percentage in that one. Speaking of Jason Tatum, and as we normally do on Wednesdays, we'll bounce around to a bunch of random topics around the league. The Boston Celtics are now 2-5. It took all of 7 games for Marcus Smart to publicly shame the best players on his team for not sharing the ball with him enough. I'm not surprised. I mean, it feels like the Celtics have been like just kind of wavering over this point for the last couple of years. And it always feels like they win just enough games that it doesn't really become a real problem. But 2-5 to begin the year, not the end of the world. I mean, especially when there are now essentially 10 playoff teams. You have a pretty good shot of righting the ship as long as you have the talent, which Boston certainly does. But man, I mean, I didn't think it would go off the rails this quickly. And again, I think they have the talent to get this thing turned around and probably be just fine. But it almost feels like the better that Jaylen Brown has gotten, the more he's improved as his career has gone on, like the worse of a fit he's somehow become next to Tatum.
Yeah, Marcus Smart saying a lot for someone who's shooting 29% from the field. something, maybe there's a reason he's not something being to think passed about. To. Something to think about, Marcus. Yeah, I mean, Jaylen Brown's emergence is crazy. I think collectively, you know, the consensus is that Tatum's the best player on the team, but we are approaching a point in which it seems within the realm of possibility that Jaylen Brown becomes the best player on the Celtics. I mean, he has been, but just in general. And then at least just some weird organizational decisions, because it does feel like the organization has been more committed to Tatum. And the fit is kind of weird, you know, like everyone said, you want these multi-dimensional two-way wings. Those are the superstars of the league. But at the same time, by default, that kind of means your point guard's probably not going to be as good, stuff like that. I mean, a lot of this, I think, is just a matter of, again, Tatum is shooting 40% from the field. Schroeder's at 36. Smart's 29. They're just shooting badly. Right. Once that improves, you know, they'll be good.
Yeah, I think so, too. I do think Tatum is still clearly the best player. Like, we've just seen it from him more often, and his heights, I think, have been higher. Yeah. But it's definitely close enough that you could at least debate it, you know. And I think it's, you know, it's almost like Westbrook Durant, that type of thing, where it's like, and I don't know, maybe even that was clearer that it was Durant. But there were still people out there who would argue to the death that Russell Westbrook was better, you know. And you're like, I don't know if I'm taking you seriously as a person, but I'm sure there are people in Boston who are like, no, Jaylen Brown's better. And whether it's a real debate or not, whether it's accurate or not, the fact that that exists, I don't think is usually a good thing, right? You know, unless it's a blissful scenario, you know, where both stars are happy to coexist alongside each other, which has that ever even happened? You know, like, I think the closest we ever got to that was Curry and Durant. And, you know, lo and behold, it turned out that it wasn't all that smooth the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is different, you know, maybe when you're drafted to the same team and they've just been teammates for so long. And I haven't heard anything, not that I remember, of them like not liking each other.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, they're both taking 20 shots a game. I mean, that's huge usage out of your two best players. You know, and so if they play bad on any given night, it's just, you're just breaking so many shots just at the team by default. And I think, yeah, I mean, also Al Horford's playing out of his mind. So you're, you know, most people's thought would be, well, if Al Horford is, you know,
they're wasting the start by Al Horford.
They really are, actually.
They are.
I think, you know, I think things are going to come together for them. But yeah, I mean, they also have a new coach, right? Yep. I mean, everyone has to get used to the new coach, who is pretty unproven, relatively speaking. And so it was kind of a bizarre move to hire an unproven coach for a team that clearly, I mean, they want to have title aspirations. They feel like they should be in that conversation. So I think some shooting regression in a positive way is on the way. I'm not panicking about the Celtics.
No, me neither. I mean, you look at Tatum, you know, his last 3 games, 1-8, 0-5, 1-4 from 3. He had that 2-15 game on opening night. I do think the ball is a factor here, and I forget who it was that brought it up yesterday, but you know, now the league is like looking into the ball, and they're working with Wilson to try to tweak it, whatever that means. I don't know what the options are there, but I'm not surprised that has been invoked as an issue, as far as a lot of players that were used to being like 40% 3-point shooters suddenly struggling. You know, a lot of players are struggling at the line as well. We saw this happen in like 07, 08, whenever they reintroduced a new ball that was, I think they ended up just like squashing it and going back to the old one. Yeah. I don't think that's an option here because you switch brands of the basketball, but I don't know. I mean, if you're in the NBA, you're using the same ball anywhere you play, right? You know, unless you're going to a local park and just hooping it up with some kids there, like if you're training, whether it's a team trainer or your private trainer, you're ensuring that you're using the balls that you're using in games. Every team uses the same balls. It's not college basketball where a Nike school uses a Nike ball and an Adidas school uses an Adidas ball. And some teams use Wilson and some teams use Spalding. Like, you know, there's almost some like home court advantage to using the ball that you practice with. The NBA, it's standardized to a point where you're really never using any balls but the ones that you've been using. So I don't know. I actually do weirdly have a little bit of sympathy for that argument.
Yeah, I completely forgot about like having to deal with the different balls, like playing competitive basketball and dealing with like, it's crazy to me that college athletes have to deal with that. And I know it sounds like we might be making like mountains out of molehills, but like that, you're saying like these guys practice like thousands of shots with the same ball. And then you give them one that's like that, the one, I think maybe it was around like 2012 or something. They tried to change to composite leather, you know, because of PETA or something. They tried not to kill as many cows. And everyone was like, listen, we do not care about the cows that die for these basketballs. All right. Like, Steve Nash was like, my fingers are bleeding.
Right.
But yeah, it could be an issue. On the other hand, there are plenty of players who are shooting out of their minds right now. So I don't know what to make. Like Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, right.
Is the hottest 3-point shooter ever at the.
So right. Well, and he's like the guy who's taken more shots with the old ball than anybody. Like in theory, it should be harder for guys who've been shooting with that for a decade and a half.
Little do we know, in the offseason, he's practicing exclusively with Wilson. And now his time has come. But yeah, so I don't know how much I look into it. I think it's a convenient excuse for a lot of players playing poorly, and nobody's bringing up about the players who are playing well.
Yeah. Oh, Paul George is the one who called it trash the other night. And he's playing pretty well. I mean, he's had some really nice games so far. He's like the number one player in fantasy. So if he's complaining, that says a lot. The Miami Heat look very real. I watched most of that game last night against Dallas, and I caught them a couple other times this year. They had that blowout of Milwaukee that you almost can't count because the game, it was a real game for like 11 minutes and then just kind of a shoot around for the Heat. But man, I mean, that, I thought Dallas actually played pretty well. They were down Porzingis. They were down Maxi Kleba. But they made a lot of tough shots. They hung in this game. It was fairly close even in through the fourth quarter. But Miami, it felt like, was going on defense. They were going like 120%. On offense, they were going like 80% and still just scoring at will. It was amazing. I mean, Tyler Hero being the weapon that he is off the bench, I think that's the biggest thing that stuck out, because they, you know, Kyle Lowry had a nice game. Bam Adebayo is, you know, really not doing anything but scoring and rebounding anymore. And credit to you, you called that in the pre-draft process. You said he's just not going to have the assist production that he has the last couple of years. And that's exactly been the case. He's struggled to get to like 1-2 assists per game so far, but Jimmy Butler is playing arguably the best basketball of his career. Duncan Robinson's been off to a terrible start. It just hasn't mattered at all. I mean, they if they're going to be this team through most of the regular season and they're going to be healthy in the playoffs, I think I maybe, and I was fairly high on the Heat, but I think I may have even underestimated Miami.
I think so too. I mean, you mentioned Tyler Hero. He's taking the most shots on the team.
He has a higher usage rate than James Harden right now.
Yeah, it's crazy. He's 18 shots a game. He's not getting to the free throw line that much. Like Jimmy Butler takes 16 shots a game, but he gets to the free throw line.
It's a lot of mid-range for Hero.
Yeah, I mean, he's also taking 7 threes. I mean, he's a shooter. That's kind of what it comes down to. And his passing is improved. Anyway, he's having a great year. But yeah, you're right about the team in general. They're playing really excellent. You know, their defense is amazing. Kyle Lowry got off to a really, really slow start and has only recently started to pick things back up. He's averaging 11 points a game. And it just hasn't mattered for them. And you look at like their on off court stuff, like PJ Tucker is leading the team with 13 plus 13. Although I think that's partially because he and Markieff Morris don't share the court together that much. And Markieff Morris is minus 18. But yeah, man, I think they're legit. I mean, at least through 2 weeks, it really does seem like it.
Best defense and best net rating in the league by far. I do still have some depth concerns. You know, we'll see. I think they could use one more bench guy. I think they're playing like Max Strus, Gabe Vincent, KZ Akpala. Like ideally you don't have to play those guys. Like, you know, they're fine if they're your like ninth guy. You probably don't want them to be your seventh or eighth guy. So I think they're a team that if they could add, I don't know, I'm thinking, you know, like a Thaddeus Young type, or, you know, Jeremy Lamb, if Indiana were to let him go, like just a solid bench option, not somebody that necessarily moves the needle when you see the transaction come across, but I think they could use like one more veteran to really solidify that bench. But yeah, I think the biggest concern for them is just health, right? And if Lowry and Butler can make it through the season and be healthy in the playoffs, I think they're probably still a slight tick below Milwaukee for me, and probably Brooklyn by the time we get there. But I mean, they're very clearly the top competitor to those two teams right now. I think they've moved ahead of Atlanta or Boston or Chicago, New York, whatever other team you want to throw into that tier.
I agree, and obviously they've done everything in the past to prove to us that they're a legit, like Jimmy Butler. I mean, we talk about the whole bubble. Last year their showing was awful, obviously, but kind of a weird year in general. I don't know how much stock you put into that. Right. I think they're kind of revitalized this season, and yeah, I mean, they look amazing. They just look really well constructed. You mentioned, I do think they need more bench depth. Markieff Morris probably shouldn't have a higher usage rate than Kyle Lowry, stuff like that, but it'll all get figured out. Yeah, if they can stay healthy, they're in a great spot to be like the leader of the second tier in the East. Although right now it looks like there's just one giant number one tier.
Yeah, it really does so far. And maybe Victor Oladipo comes back and is that guy.
Well, that too.
I certainly would not count on that. I saw him like going toward the end of some fantasy drafts this year. I was like, I'm not that optimistic. I'm envious of people who are that optimistic. But if he comes back and gives you anything, that's probably better than what you would find on the buyout or like the low end trade market.
I mean, all you're really asking for him is to be better than Max Strus, right? Like that's the baseline. Yeah. I think he can. So I think I completely forgot about him, but he's the fact that they just have him like in their back pocket is crazy.
Yeah, having somebody like that and not expecting anything from them really is the ideal scenario. Let's just say the Heat are playing well enough that Udonis Haslem has already appeared in two games this year, which is two more or one more than last year and half as many as in 2019. So he's he's on pace to like shatter his most games played since probably 2014.
The new NBA season is underway, and Yahoo is excited to kick off daily fantasy basketball. There will be a ton of big prize contests throughout the season on Yahoo, including their multi-entry contest now being offered shark-free. To celebrate the beginning of basketball season and Yahoo Daily Fantasy becoming shark-free, Yahoo is giving all users the opportunity to claim a free $10 in site credit. Users can take advantage of this free $10 site credit offer to join one of Yahoo's biggest contests. In addition to the free credit, Yahoo will have a Friday main contest as well as single game contest all season long. Play in a single game contest of your choice throughout the week, then join our Friday main contest to compete for our largest cash prize. Play daily fantasy basketball on Yahoo this season. Visit sports.yahoo.com/dailyfantasy/welcome to get started. The RotoWire NBA podcast is brought to you by Vivid Seats. Preseason basketball has wrapped up and we're ready for the regular season to tip off this week. Live events are making a comeback, and there's no better place to be than Vivid Seats to get back into the action. So grab your NBA tickets and cheer on your favorite team from the stands. Man, that feels good to say. Even better, Vivid Seats just launched a new and improved rewards program with free tickets for every single fan. Earn rewards, ticket upgrades, and perks just for shopping with Vivid Seats. If you're looking for tickets to the game, your favorite artist, or that new show that everyone is talking about, Vivid Seats has it all. Visit vividseats.com, that's VIVIDSEATS, vividseats.com, or download the Vivid Seats app today. Vivid Seats, life happens live.
So you wrote an article on the site for today that also went out to some of our partner sites. Very well done piece on early season boom players, guys who are probably playing a little bit over their head so far, especially relative to their ADP in fantasy. And you covered Ja Morant, Miles Bridges, Al Horford, Bane and Melton in Memphis, Chris Duarte, Carmelo, who is having quite the renaissance right now, Alex Caruso, the Orlando Magic, who I actually do want to touch on. I covered them in my piece on Tuesday. They have four guys in the top 85 right now in fantasy, which I don't think anybody really saw that coming. And that's with Chuma Okeke having played two games so far. So, eventually maybe he adds to that. But you wrote this piece, so I'll let you steer this where you want to go. Morant, Bridges, anyone else on this list that you want to touch on their hot start and whether you think it's actually sustainable?
Yeah, I mean, I think Montrezl Harrell has been interesting just because I think after last season, people were just like, I guess, convinced that he was just like a complete fake. I don't know how to explain it. Like he was still getting drafted a decent amount, but the Wizards center depth is not great. And Daniel Gafford is starting for them, but Montrezl Harrell has consistently been getting more minutes. And he's right now he's averaging 32 minutes a game and averaging 18 and 10 on 60% shooting. So like incredible revival season from him. Also was not expecting Harrison Barnes to just have a late career breakout. Like Harrison Barnes played pretty well last year, showed some signs of like kind of turning into a different player. Like, when he was in Dallas, they were like, okay, we need you to be a mid-post god. They were like, this is the 1980s. You're taking the ball in the mid-post and you're shooting long mid-rangers. Then he came to Sacramento and they're like, okay, stand in the corner, Harrison, and shoot threes like you did on the Warriors. And now they're like, here, Harrison, have the ball and just go to work. Just ISO Harrison Barnes. And it's working. Like, he's getting to the free throw line. He's shooting, like his shooting percentages are sustainable. He's playing better than De'Aaron Fox. Like, it's just the Kings are such a weird team. And somehow Harrison Barnes is like the leader of it right now.
If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions. And even more so, making the right decision. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WynnBET, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WynnBET is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WynnBET brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more are at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at Baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in 6 U.S. states, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding nationwide. At WynnBET, the possibilities are limitless. WynnBET is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. All you have to do is download the WynnBET app right now. That's WynnBET, WynnBET. WynnBET, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast.
Fox has been a monster disappointment so far. I may have overexposed myself to De'Aaron Fox into fantasy leagues, and he's down about 8 points per game. He's down about a half of assist per game. The steals have been there, thankfully, but his shot blocking has declined. He used to actually be a pretty big asset from a guard perspective, especially a point guard in that area. And then most concerningly, he's at 36% from the field, less than one made three per game. He's shooting the three at a 15.4% clip. He is currently 6 of 39 from three on the season. And worse yet, 63% at the line. 63% for a player who's hovered in the low 70s. Like that's been a pretty big liability when he was at 71, 72, 73%. He was always a player that I just really liked, like as a person. He was like seemed somebody I would like trust to get better. And he's just kind of leveled off. And last year I think there were some strides at times. It's only 7 games, but he's dug himself quite a hole, at least percentage-wise.
This is the problem with especially guards or lead ball handlers. If they just can never improve their shot, people kind of just like opponents kind of just stop taking them seriously at a certain point. And they just don't guard them. They just guard them for the drive and they make sure to get back in transition. Cause De'Aaron Fox reminds me a lot of John Wall, where it's like, if you give him the ball in transition, he's one of the fastest players in the league, right? He's going to get his easy layups, but in the half court, things get a little more complicated. And I think, with even fewer fouls being called this season, it's obviously affecting some players, but guys who already aren't great shooters that rely on trying to draw fouls and stuff like that, I think it's really tough for them. So I think I expect Fox to bounce back. Obviously we're talking about a bad 7-game stretch, but, it's definitely been rough for him as well as plenty of others.
Yeah, he's been near the top of that list. We've talked extensively about Michael Porter. James and I went deep on him on Monday. I think he for me is the top of the list of guys I am the most concerned about. Every single aspect has been bad so far. It's like, I would rather you go out and shoot, I'd rather you have the Jason Tatum start, where you go like 8 of 30 from the field than just be this quiet, you know, roll. Like, he took 9 shots in 36 minutes the other night in a loss to the Grizzlies. 9 shots, three 3-point attempts in that game. Like, the lack of aggression there has just been, it's been bizarre. Like, Michael Porter's outside of the top 150 right now in fantasy leagues.
People are drafting him in like top 25, basically.
Yeah, I think you'd see him around like 22 to 30-ish. Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned like his lack of aggression. He's taking only 18% of his shots at the rim this season. 2 years ago as a rookie, that was 41%. So he's down essentially half of his shots at the rim. He's replacing those with long mid-rangers, what everyone obviously wants to see. And he's not drawing any fouls. He's creating for himself less than ever. It's just really bizarre. Like, you know, like this season, 83% of his shots are assisted. As a rookie, that was 71%. So he's just taking more long mid-rangers and creating for himself less than ever. It's awful. It's like the exact opposite of what you want to see from someone's development. It's like he's going backwards.
Yeah, really bizarre. And especially in a situation where, like, I've kind of looked back and said, like, was it too obvious, you know, with no Jamal Murray, that we would just assume that he would step in and be this guy? But I then remembered that we had like a, what, 20-ish game sample, maybe a little more, including playoffs, of him basically being the number two guy and being really good at it without Murray. So it's not like Murray got hurt in the final playoff game of the year, and all of a sudden you're asking him to step into a new role. Like, it's a role that he's semi-familiar with already.
Yeah, and there, you know, you could look at every number. You could be, you know, the on-off court numbers with Jamal Murray, like you mentioned, that entire stretch. Like, there was nothing to indicate, or everything was pointing to, hey, MPJ is going to be a fringe all-star this season. Like, he's going to put up insane numbers. And his usage rate is basically low, as low as ever. He's not really that, like, he's playing like a role player. You know, and like, Jokic obviously dominates the offense. Jokic himself is playing out of his mind, which is to be expected without Murray there. But it's just there's just like so many guys doing that kind of like second, like Porter's taking 12 shots a game. Will Barton's taking 12 shots a game. Aaron Gordon's taking 10 shots a game. Monte Morris is taking 10 shots a game. Like, it's so distributed next to Jokic. It's like, there's not really a clear number two where we thought there would be a clear number two for, I believe, like $12 or $14 million a year or something, like very low. He turned it down. I think his agent's Rich Paul, if I'm not mistaken. And so, now he's just launching shots. He's got 25% usage rate. That's higher than Darius Garland, for example. He's creating more of his own shots than ever. You know, I think like his steal rate is going to decrease, but you know, I think the breakout's real. The volume is way up. You know, I mean, maybe when Rozier and Hayward and Oubre, maybe that gets more comfortable within the offense, his field goal attempts decrease a little bit. But I don't know, man. It's like, what is really going to stop Miles Bridges from, you know, like Gordon Hayward and Rozier were kind of fighting for that like second best player on the team role to some extent. But I don't know, what's to stop Miles Bridges from just like jumping in and claiming that?
I mean, he's done it so far, and they've all managed to be productive. That's the thing, is like, they're scoring a ton of points. They're playing fast. So like, there's been enough production, I guess, to go around. I think he's like, this is him, the player. Like, he can be this good. I just wonder if the opportunity, I guess, is going to be there to take this many shots. You know, like, he's been extremely aggressive so far. If you watch these games, like the type of shots that he just wasn't taking early in his career when he was pretty solidified as a young role player. You know, I don't know if he didn't have the confidence or had felt like he had to defer, whatever it might be. But I mean, he's like operating as a star. Like, I think that's the mindset that he has, which is normally what you want. And he's played well enough to justify it. I just wonder, you know, you have Hayward, you have Rozier, Kelly Oubre has been pretty good for them so far. I think the biggest threat is probably PJ Washington. Like, he's played really well these last couple of games, and Bridges essentially just like stole his spot in the starting lineup. And I don't know if you want to be using Washington like 18 minutes off the bench. I think the ideal scenario is they eventually just kind of phase out Plumlee, and you go Washington, Bridges, Hayward, Rozier, Ball. Like, that's by far the most intriguing lineup to me. But I just feel like there's a chance that at some point, like, Bridges, you know, kind of goes back to being like half star, half role player, I guess. Like, what he's doing right now, like, I don't think he's going to finish as like a top 20 fantasy player. Like, that can't be like considered a shocking remark, right?
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, I think like 35-ish seems realistic. because I've said this before in the pod. I feel like he's pretty comparable to like a athletic Tobias Harris. And basically the numbers he's putting up right now. But he's, I mean, this season he is leading the team in minutes per game. So, and even he still is over the past three games with Rozier back. So I don't, maybe he stays in that role. And like you mentioned, I mean, maybe they just completely phase out other guys. Like they start to really reduce Mason Plumlee, or they just completely get rid of the Ish Smith and Jalen McDaniels minutes and like not even play those guys at all. Yeah. Which I feel like, I mean, if you're this Hornets and you have been playing this well, it's like, I think I would just rather say like, hey, sorry, Ish Smith, we're just not playing you anymore, man.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned Al Horford. I would imagine this has to be the best start of his career. I didn't go back and look at his first five games from every season, but right. I mean, I was way lower on him, I think, than you were. I think you smartly targeted him late in some drafts. I just didn't think he had much left. And I think taking last season off essentially was probably really good for him because he is 35, but you know, he doesn't have the wear and tear of a 34-year-old season on his body. I mean, he's averaging a double-double so far. He's at 3 assists per game. He's averaging his most steals ever so far at 1.2, by far his most blocks ever at 3.2 per game. He's the one guy I think that stands out most on this list as far as like this kind of being a mirage early on. And like, I think he can, you know, much like Bridges, I think he can still be really effective, but I do not see Al Horford more than doubling his career high in blocks per game at age 35.
The blocks, I think, are the fakest one. And he had like one really good game. I think that's fueling his numbers. Surprising about the rebounding as well, you know, playing next to Robert Williams often. You know, I think the one thing that I tried to look into, you know, he is spending a lot more time around the basket than his past two seasons. You know, in Philadelphia, they basically needed him to be a stretch four next to Embiid. And in Oklahoma City, I don't think they were interested in him being really anything else other than a stretch four or a stretch five. And he's shooting a lot more around the basket. He's getting to the free throw line. The Celtics are more comfortable with him there. So I think he's just in a role that he's more comfortable with at this point, and that lends itself to more rebounds and a better field goal percentage and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, he's ranked 23rd in fantasy right now. You know, obviously that'd be like the third best mark of his career, and I don't expect that to keep up. But even if he can normalize, and for him, that's roughly ranks like 40 to 50. If he can normalize around there, anyone who drafted him is like getting a great steal because he was going, I think, outside of the top 100.
I want to hit on Desmond Bain real quickly. Bain and Melton, I think, are kind of thrown into the same category because they've been in similar positions in Memphis. But I've been really impressed with Bain, especially. And Melton's had a nice start as well. You know, his defensive numbers are always really encouraging. But I think Bain looks like a legitimately improved player, whereas I think Melton is maybe just kind of doing a lot of the same things, but just seeing more minutes. Like Bain looks like he's taken a major step, even from last year when he was really good as a rookie.
Yeah, yeah, Bain is, they're doing everything, the Grizzlies are doing everything they can to get him open looks. He's more aggressive. We knew he was a knockdown shooter already. And it's just, I mean, this is what happens with guys. If you really dedicate a great 3-point shooter to seeing insane volume, and he's athletic enough to, you know, do work off the ball and get himself open. And yeah, he's having a great season, good passer. You know, Grizzlies are full of high IQ players, so he can make easy reads and everything like that. I think it's pretty real. Like the tough thing to determine is what happens when Dylan Brooks comes back. I still think that the Grizzlies have enough like leeway in their rotation to not really decrease the minutes of Bane at all. They are playing Zaire Williams. Trying to see how many minutes per game. Playing Zaire Williams 17 minutes a game. You know, Tyus Jones, Sam Merrill, Conchar, especially Conchar, is playing 14 minutes a game and has played in all but one game. So when Brooks comes back, I mean, I think there's 30 minutes for him, and I think Bane can play the same amount of minutes, and Melton's minutes, I think, are probably at the most risk of decreasing, but not, it won't be like a complete, I mean, he's not going to get DMPs or anything like that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So the Magic guys, Franz Wagner, Cole Anthony, Mo Bamba, Wendell Carter. As of yesterday, I haven't checked the rankings yet today, but as of yesterday when I wrote my piece, all four of those guys in the top 85. Cole Anthony, I think, he was in the top 40. He's been fantastic so far. That was one of my biggest misses, was just kind of, you know, throwing him away and thinking that, you know, he might even be their sixth man and Jalen Suggs would kind of take over. He's put together like five games already this year that would have been easily his best game last year. Most recently, 31, 9, 8, 2 steals and a block in their win over Minnesota on Monday. He's got 4 games now with at least 24 points. He has 4 games with at least 9 rebounds. He has a 16-rebound game in there in a win over the Knicks. The assists have been there. He was a guy that I really liked coming into last year, and I just thought he looked a little overwhelmed. I thought maybe he, you know, looked a little undersized, like some of the same problems that he ran into before getting injured in college at North Carolina. But man, I don't think he's really going to truly contend for most improved player, but he's going to be in the conversation, man. Like I think like guys like Morant and like Hero have taken such big steps and they're such prominent guys that it would be hard for him to really win the award. But I think he's taken a massive leap, at least what we've seen through 8 games.
Yeah, another great example, and this happens every year, of just like people being a little disappointed in someone's rookie year and then completely forgetting about them, like as a sophomore. Like sophomore guards in fantasy are always good players to draft at the back end. And it's funny too, because I think you, James, and me were all like pretty high on Cole Anthony as like a dark horse rookie of the year last year. And I don't think either of us really like targeted him this year in fantasy. But yeah, he's playing great. High usage rate, good passer. He was even a great rebounder last season. So the fact that he's averaging so many rebounds per game, 7.6, is not crazy. It'll go down a little bit, but not a ton. And when Markelle Fultz comes back, things might get a little weird, but I don't expect him to see like a major role decrease. There are other guys on the roster that I think whose minutes will go down.
Are you surprised by Bamba or Carter like finding ways to coexist? We kind of got a preview of it in the preseason, but you know, I wasn't even sure that they would actually, you know, have the courage to throw out that lineup in the regular season. And you know, they're the worst defense in the league. They're not a good team, although they have 2 respectable wins over Minnesota and the Knicks. However, they did lose to Detroit, which automatically disqualifies you as a good team. The Pistons are a complete mess right now. But it's looked pretty good. I mean, like if you're judging by, are your young players like offering encouraging production? The answer is resoundingly yes.
So they're not a good team, but believe it or not, their starting five is the best 5-man lineup in the NBA.
By what metric? Just size?
Point differential.
How is that possible?
I don't know. I've looked it up. You know, I keep an eye on that because it's interesting to me. But yeah, it doesn't include garbage time. Let's keep that in mind. But they're plus 21 per 100 possessions. Best 5-man group in the league that's played at least 100 possessions together. The Orlando Magic starting five. Cole Anthony himself is plus 57. Yeah, I guess I'm not super surprised that Bamba and Carter are working together, just because they can both shoot threes and their defensive potential is really good. And Bamba's terrifying on the defensive end. So, you know, it is a little, it's non-traditional, but like, you know, what the Cavaliers are doing is non-traditional, and that's working with Mobley and Allen, and Mobley shooting fewer threes than I think like Carter and Bamba are. So, you know, especially again, like I've mentioned this multiple times, but the refs are letting things go more. If you're playing a bigger lineup that can play physical, and it's you're at an advantage right now relative to other seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. We haven't even touched on Franz Wagner, who I think has been, I mean, for me, he's been right up there with Josh Giddey as the two biggest positive rookie surprises so far. I didn't think Evan Mobley would be this good, especially on defense right away, but you can at least see the pieces there. Like I thought Wagner would be somewhat of a non-factor this year. You know, I wouldn't have been surprised if he was playing like 10 minutes a game to start and, you know, just kind of looked out of place and needed to gain weight and all that. But I mean, he's scored in double figures in all eight games, had 28, 4, 2, 2 steals and a block, had 5 threes in that game against Minnesota. He looks really, really good and much more NBA ready than I expected.
Way better creating his own shot than I expected. I think that was the most surprising part to me, or it continues to be the most surprising part for me. He's shooting really well right now. He's like 50% from the field, 40% from three or something like that. But he's been an amazing glue guy for them. Like, he's just the perfect example of someone who makes the right cuts. He fills space really well. He's not afraid to shoot it when he's open, keeps his turnovers low, everything like that. Like, he's just a perfect plug and play player. And normally, like, those guys are not the guys who come out and play really well as rookies, you know, like they'll have a really low usage rate, or they'll play like 20 minutes or something. And for him, it's working out right now. And it definitely is surprising, but it's good to see.
So to finish out, I want to check in on some of the updated player award odds. Maybe we'll even get into some title odds here if we have time. But Stephen Curry has now overtaken Luka Doncic as the MVP favorite at the DK Sportsbook. He's at plus 550. Luka right there, still at plus 650. Durant plus 650. Giannis plus 650. These guys are all 12-1 or higher. You have Embiid, Jokic, LeBron, Lillard, Harden, Trae Young. Those round out your top 10. I still think I'm leaning Giannis here. I know the Bucks have gotten off to a slower start record-wise, just because I think more than anything, all the injuries they've had, they have not played one full game with like anywhere close to their regular rotation. I mean, they've had like at least two starters out, if not three, for virtually every game so far. So I don't read too much into that, but I think long-term Giannis is going to have the best numbers. I feel like this is like the third straight year of Doncic just getting off to the same slow start, right? When there's all this hype, you know, building off of the previous season. And it just seems like he kind of reaches a zenith at the end of one season and then kind of falls back to where he was at the beginning of the previous season, rather than just continuing on that same trajectory.
Yeah, the Doncic slow start thing is weird. I'm sure that, I mean, you know, I've never heard any sort of reporting that people have been impressed with Doncic's offseason workouts. In fact, there's
you don't hear a whole lot, which is not a good thing.
You don't hear a whole lot. From what I understand,
Dallas is like, we'll just kind of, we don't want to rock the boat here.
I think literally he is on a boat somewhere in Slovenia. He probably throws a cell phone in the water for the year, comes back with a burner. And it's like, hey guys, I'm here. So yeah, I mean, that's not surprising. He gets off to a slow start, especially with Jason Kidd, new head coach. Yeah. Curry's basically doing what he did last season. The shots per game are almost identical. He's actually shooting a little bit worse right now. I mean, he basically has room again to lead the league in scoring and average about 6 assists. His rebounding is always good. He's a better steals guy than I think a lot of people realize. And you know, the West looks wide open. I think that's the main thing. For Curry is the Warriors. I don't think they'll finish number one in the West, but the Lakers have had their fair share of struggles, and a lot of other teams just don't look like completely great. And the Warriors have such little talent compared to Milwaukee that I think if people think it's roughly a tie statistics between Curry and Giannis, that people will just be like, well, let's just give another one to Curry. We don't, you know, Curry's probably more deserving of another MVP than Giannis is in people's eyes.
I don't know about that. I think once they get Klay back, all of a sudden you're back to this super team Warriors that actually has a decent amount of depth. So I think they're comparable. I'm not saying Milwaukee has like less talent than Golden State. Probably is more. And obviously, you know, winning the title is fresh in the mind. So I don't think you're necessarily off there, but I don't think there's like a huge gap between those two when Golden State's at full strength. But there are a lot of positive indicators with Curry. You know, we've seen other stars who are off to slow starts. You know, like their free throw rate is way down. Like his is right where it's been the last few years. Actually higher than where it was, not last year, but the couple of years before that. Like you said, his field goal attempts are right there. He's still shooting it really well at the line. He's taking more threes per game than he was last year, and his percentage is down slightly. So like you said, I mean, he's averaging 29 points per game, but he's doing it on 42% shooting. This is a guy that when he's right, he's 47, 48, 49%. So I think there's a pretty good chance that number comes up. So he's off to what seems like a good start. Good enough to be the number one favorite to win the MVP, but it also feels like he still has room to improve. Whereas I'm not sure you could say that about some of the other guys near the top of this list. Yeah, I think what we're seeing from Giannis, what we're seeing from KD, even Luka, who I think will improve efficiency wise, but you know, I don't know if they have like a ton of improvement for what have been like good, not great starts.
I agree. Curry just, for me, he checks a lot of boxes. He's been there before. The team, you know, you have the like, you counted the team out factor. They were bad for a while. He also has like nostalgia. Like you get like the nostalgia of the Warriors pre-Durant. People want it back so bad. You know, kind of like this, you know, people love to hate the Lakers sometimes. I think there's just kind of a lot narrative wise that would drive a Curry MVP. I'm not saying that Giannis couldn't have similar narratives. I mean, especially if he continues to shoot well from three. I mean, Giannis could win it if his numbers get gaudy enough because he just has that potential. But I do like the Curry MVP right now.
Mm-hmm. The argument I've maintained with Giannis is I think he's the safest bet for the combination of stats and wins. And right. Milwaukee needs to get healthy for the wins component to come around. But I think he's the guy that you don't worry about the team, you know, being so bad that he can't win it. And you don't worry about the numbers. And there might be a guy who has slightly better numbers. There might be a guy who has a slightly better team, but I don't know if there's a safer bet in terms of both of those things being there as long as he stays healthy. Is there any case for LeBron right now at 18-1? Like the old man case that I think he's been building these last 2 years and then he gets hurt and it gets wiped away?
Not right now. It could build up. I don't know. The Westbrook thing makes it complicated. They do have a lot of help. I think they would need to play really well. I mean, they have so much talent that anything less than 55 wins almost feels like a disappointment relative to their talent level. So I think that has to be factored in. And I mean, he still has it, man. Like I watched the end of that Rockets Lakers game last night.
That was vintage, like second act LeBron.
He took over the game for like three straight minutes and just bullied his way to the rim and just layup after layup after layup. It was insane. But the thing is, he's not going to be that guy for a whole season, for a whole game. I just don't think it's there for him this year.
He needs to take fewer threes, I think. You know, he's already now under 35%. He got off to a great start from three and then just tailed off a little bit. I mean, he's taking his, so far, you know, we talk about Westbrook and Davis and all that. Like he's taking his most field goal attempts per game since 2007, 2008, which like that's kind of a good thing, kind of not a good thing. He also has his fewest free throw attempts per game by far of his career.
That was what I was about to bring up. He's taking 3.8 free throws per game, which that's would be the so lowest bad. Of his career by a huge margin, by like two full free throws. And we all knew this was coming, right? It was just a matter of when, you know, when was LeBron not going to get to the line anymore? If the athleticism starts to decline, he's 37 years old. Like let's be real about like his free throw rate. But I don't know, man, he's decent enough from three. I mean, the thing is his free throw percentage is the worst part of his game. So if he's eliminating that and replacing it with decent three point shooting, I guess technically he might become more efficient, very bizarre and backwards. But yeah. And he's turned into a great, like that turnaround 16 footer. That shot is insane if he can keep that going. So
yeah, the jumper looks good. I'll say that it looks a little less stiff. Like I remember at the beginning of last year, he was looking very stiff. Like they had done a little too much weightlifting. It looks a little smoother, but yeah, the free throw rate is a big time concern. And he's actually shooting free throws at a pretty good clip so far. He's at 78%. I mean, he's been under 70% the last 3 years and four of the last five. So ideally, you'd like him shooting more free throws, but I don't know. I mean, it's a combination of just him playing on the perimeter more, you know, probably being like most players are, like somewhat victimized by just fewer calls overall. So I get that, but I mean, LeBron James taking fewer than four free throws a game is a major, major problem. And something that I would hope they address. I mean, he's, I feel like people have brought this up to him and he usually just kind of brushes it off, which is ironic because he spent most of his career saying that he's not getting to the line enough. And now he's just like, okay with not getting to the line. So you kind of have to pick a side there, I guess. But I mean, he's been at about six free throw attempts per game, slightly under that the last 2 years. He's got to get over five per game. If he's under five per game, I think you're teetering on a dangerous like amount of reliance on that jumper.
I mean, at some point it's gonna come, right? Like he just I think that's why he's been working on the jumper. Like that jumper that he's taking is, or the turnaround, like baseline or, you know, 16 footer is a ridiculous shot. Just,
yeah, it's unguardable.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think that's kind of been his plan, is just like, I know I'm not gonna be able to get to the rim as much. I just have to keep doing this shot over and over and over again, so that when I'm 41 years old and I want to still be playing NBA basketball, I can just be Dirk Nowitzki.
Right.
Which is crazy. But yeah.
How much do you buy this narrative that you see all over Twitter of like, well, LeBron just can't get by guys anymore? Like, I don't know that I've seen that. I don't know where, like, maybe you just watched the wrong game and he looks a little slow. Like, and again, the Houston Rockets are not the 2004 Detroit Pistons by any means, but I mean, he was abusing anybody who was in front of him. And I still think he looks like some of the dunks that he's already thrown down through like six games look like they could, you know, if you just transpose him into a Cavs uniform, they look like they could be from 2015. They really do. Like the alley-oop that he had on that fast break from Davis last night, like that is not something that year 19 players are doing. So I really do think that the narrative's a little overblown, that he's, you know, lost a step athletically or can't blow by guys. Like, he's not what he was in 2008 or even like 2016. But I also don't think he's way closer to that than he is like what Carmelo Anthony or even Chris Paul are at this point in their careers. Like, I don't think he's entered that phase yet.
Yeah, I mean, Miami LeBron was a different level of like athlete, NBA player. Like, he was in his peak shape. He was his peak shooter. That was insane stuff. But I mean, I think to me, it's not that he can't get by guys. It's just like, I just don't think I think it just takes too much effort now. Like, there's no reason. He doesn't have to. Like, he doesn't have to try to cross over and drive by everybody who's guarding him for the entire game anymore, like he was doing early in Cleveland or anything like that. Like, he, you know, it's just, it doesn't make sense for him to continue to do that until it's the playoffs and it really matters. And then he just goes for it.
Right. Exactly. All right, man. We'll wrap this thing up. You'll be back on Friday with Shannon and Ken this week. Is that right?
I believe so. Yeah.
All right. Well, full NBA slate as always on Wednesday night. So we'll look forward to that full slate this weekend as well. Alex, I will see you in person very soon tomorrow. My first venture back to the RotoWire office in quite some time. So looking forward to chatting with you then.